The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, The Giant Who Had No Heart in His Body features sexual assault, graphic violence, and murder. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Princess Astrid watched in horror as Kashi the Giant raised his enchanted dagger over his head. The jeweled handle glittered in the light of the fireplace. She tried to fix her eyes on the beautiful image as she braced herself for death. But instead of stabbing her, Kashi slammed the blade with all of his strength into his own chest. The giant roared in pain. He staggered backward and dropped to his knees. Astrid couldn't believe it. Her heart pounded. Her thoughts raced. Perhaps Kashi was dead, and it was finally safe to scream for help. Perhaps someone would unchain her from this bed. Perhaps she could finally escape. But Astrid's heart sank when Kashi's eyes bolted open. Instead of dying, the giant gritted his teeth. He pushed the dagger further into his chest. Blood cascaded down his chest as he twisted and dug the blade inside his body. And then he pulled it out and held it up to the light. Attached to the end of the blade was his heart. Kashi roared again. This time not in pain, but in victory. The ritual had worked. Now, without a heart, he would be immortal, and Princess Astrid would be his captive forever. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, a lecherous giant torments a princess in the Norwegian folktale, The Giant Who Had No Heart in His Body. Coming up, a prince hunts for his missing brothers, but instead finds a captive princess. In 1814, Norway seceded from Denmark and entered into a union with Sweden. In the decades that followed, in which Norway then tried to gain independence from Sweden, Norwegians experienced a renewed sense of national pride. They began celebrating their local art, history, and literature. In the 1830s, two young men, Peder Christen Osborsen and Jørgen Moe, decided to contribute to this groundswell of Norwegian culture by collecting folktales from the country's small villages. At first, Osborsen and Moe printed their findings in pamphlets, and the tales caught on immediately, impressing not just their countrymen, but an international audience. They followed up with a full, four-volume collection between the years 1841 and 1844. But for all the stories that made Osborsen and Moe's work such a success, one of the most popular may have been The Giant Who Had No Heart in His Body. It had never been written down before, but it was an ancient tale told for centuries with variations across Scandinavia, Eastern Europe, and Russia. Each region had a slightly different version. In some, the giant had no name. In Slavic tellings, he was called Kashi. But in all of the tales, there were three commonalities. A giant removed his heart to obtain immortality, he held women prisoner, and in order to kill him, someone had to find and destroy his heart. Osborsen and Moe's adaptation remained true to the three themes, but they made one important change. This time, the giant faced a new hero, a young Norwegian prince. Prince Boots was in the kitchen, helping the staff prepare lunch, when he heard a crash down the hall. He ran to the dining room to find his father, the king, weeping. A mug of kask, a potent Norwegian beverage of coffee and alcohol, lay smashed on the ground. Dark tendrils of the fluid seeped through the old man's beard. "Father!" Boots yelled. "Are you all right?" The old king teetered on his seat.
"Your brothers are dead, and there's nothing we can do about it. I might as well drink."
A few months prior, Boots' six older brothers left the castle in search of wives. The young men were the pride of the kingdom, broad-shouldered, handsome, and fearless. It was no surprise, then, that their search had been successful. The brothers had sent back a message announcing that they had found 6 beautiful wives and were on the way home. But days had passed, and then weeks, and they never arrived. They were now almost a month overdue. Boots, a lanky 16-year-old with a mop of flaxen hair, helped the servants clean up the broken mug and spilled cask. His father slammed the table.
Boots, you don't have to help everyone. You are a prince. Act like one.
But Boots just quietly finished clearing the broken mug and then sat down next to his father.
You mourn as if they're dead, Boots told him. But we don't have any proof. Why don't you let me look for them?
The king explained to Boots that he was too young and naive to go out on a search alone. Besides that, he told his son,
I cannot bear to lose all of you.
But Boots shook his head adamantly. He insisted that the king could let him go now or later, but he would never give up on finding his brothers. At that, the king grew quiet. He heard the determination in the boy's voice. With a deep sigh, he nodded. He would let Boots go, but he warned him, beyond the walls of the castle there were monsters and animals who preyed upon young travelers like him. Boots assured his father that he would be careful. He kissed the old man's forehead, bid him goodbye, and with an energetic skip, hurried up to his room to pack. Unfortunately, preparing for the quest did not get off to a smooth start. When Boots arrived at the royal stables, he found them empty. He had forgotten that his brothers had taken all the castle's stallions. Boots sat down in the straw, trying to think. He couldn't let his mission fail before it even began, but he needed a horse. That's when he heard a soft whinny outside. He sprang up and ran to the back of the barn. There, in a corral, was an ancient nag. Its belly sagged, and its ribs showed through its hide. It didn't look like it could walk a few feet, let alone hundreds of miles through the countryside. Boots sighed and rubbed the horse's muzzle. Hey, old girl, too bad I can't take you, but I think you better stay here. He strapped the horse's feed bag on and gave it an extra portion of alfalfa sprouts. After a moment, the horse whinnied again, but this time, its whinny was in Norwegian.
Thank you, my prince, it said. I'm old and slow, but I can get you where you need to go.
Boots was surprised. She certainly didn't look strong enough. But animals knew their own capabilities, and he couldn't turn up his nose in an opportunity to find his brothers. He kissed the horse's cheek and saddled her up. Soon, Boots and the old horse were on the road. They weren't able to gallop like Boots had imagined, but at least they were heading in the right direction. The young prince was thrilled to finally be on the search for his brothers. Still, after nearly a day of riding, Boots was getting concerned. He hadn't seen any sign of his brothers. In fact, he hadn't seen another traveler at all. Until, up ahead, he heard a commotion. It sounded like a struggle or a fight. Boots gave his horse a reassuring pat as they came around a bend to find an old raven in the middle of the road. It flapped its wings repeatedly, but it was too weak to take flight. After many attempts of getting off the ground, it was covered in dirt. In fact, its wings were no longer black, but a dull brown. The bird called out to Boots and the horse,
Fellow travelers, if you could spare some food, I promise I will help you in your hour of need.
Boots remembered his father's admonition, Don't trust anyone on the road. But he could see the bird was in trouble. By nightfall, it would be easy pickings for predators. The prince looked into his saddlebags. He had only packed enough rations for a couple of days, but he handed the raven a loaf of bread.
I don't see how you could ever help me, he said, but there's no need. I will happily share some food with you.
The raven pecked eagerly at the bread. After a few mouthfuls, its chest swelled. It shook the dirt off its wings, showing off glossy feathers. And then, all at once, it burst into the air and disappeared, with a friendly caw goodbye. Further down the road, Boots and the horse came to a stream. they stopped to refresh themselves in the cold glacial water. But as they were drinking, Boots heard a call for help. On the opposite bank, the prince saw a salmon languishing on a rock. It had been out of the water so long, its scales had turned gray and wrinkled. The salmon called out,
"Dear friends, if you place me back into the water, I will owe you a great favor."
Boots waded through the stream and knelt beside the fish. He told it, "I have no idea how you could possibly repay me, but that's no reason to let you die on this rock." He picked up the salmon and slid it into the water. The fish's gills engorged with water, and its crusty gray scales transformed into smooth, pink gemstones. The fish leapt high out of the water in joy. With a delighted squeak, he bid Boots and the horse farewell and disappeared down the stream. Later that evening, after a day of riding, the old horse's legs began to falter. Boots dismounted. He tried to comfort the beast, but soon it collapsed in the road. It sweated and struggled for breath. The horse apologized for not getting Boots to his brothers, but the prince just shook his head sadly. "It's me who should be sorry, old girl. I should never have taken you so far." As Boots sat with the horse, he heard a rustling in the forest nearby. After a moment, a wolf crept from the tree line. Boots leapt to his feet and drew his sword. But after a momentary standoff, Boots realized the canine wasn't hunting him or his horse. In fact, it probably couldn't hunt at all. It was bone thin. The wolf inched along, dragging itself along the ground. In a weak voice, the wolf spoke.
"Dear friend, I am Graylegs the wolf. I am so hungry, the wind whistles through my ribs. Could you spare me some food?"
Boots informed the wolf that he had already given away most of his food. What he had left would barely last him the trip home. That's when the wolf noticed the prince's horse. He told him it would be dead soon. If the prince allowed him to eat it, he would help him get to his destination. Boots knew Graylegs was right. The old horse was barely breathing. So he told the wolf, "I am too heavy for you to carry, but after I put my horse out of its misery, you are welcome to eat it." Boots pulled a dagger from his belt. He rubbed the horse's snout. Then, with one swift motion, he slit her throat. Before Boots could step away, Graylegs pounced on the carcass. He tore into it. Boots had never seen anything so brutal. The wolf pulled at the muscles and devoured the flesh. Blood spattered on the road and on the wolf's fur. After a few moments, the horse was nearly gone. Only a handful of gnawed bones remained. Graylegs was utterly changed too. He had doubled in size, almost as tall as a bear. Each of his paws were larger than a man's hand, and beneath the horse's blood, his fangs and muzzle looked strong and fearsome. Boots realized he had made a big mistake. Not only had he failed to find his brothers, he was about to be attacked by a monstrous wolf. Coming up, Boots prepares to fight for his quest and his life. Hi, listeners. It's Vanessa from Parcast. When you think of a criminal, do you picture a killer, a gangster, a thief? I bet you didn't think it could be the little old lady down the street who murdered her tenants. Every Wednesday on my series, Female Criminals, meet the unlikeliest of felons. Mothers, neighbors, and unsuspecting lovers with a penchant for dangerous behavior. Discover the psychology and motives behind their disturbing crimes and find out where their story stands today. But that's not all. Airing right now on Female Criminals is our special 5-part look at the world's most infamous femme fatales, women who were deceptive and deadly, but not always the villain. Catch these episodes and more by following the Spotify original from Parcast, Female Criminals. New episodes premiere weekly. Listen free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the story. Prince Boots trembled as Graylegs the wolf approached. The giant canine's bright yellow eyes glowed in the dusk air. Blood dripped from the creature's fangs. This was exactly what Boots' father had warned him about. He was too trusting. Now he was going to be devoured by the animal that he had just helped. Boots raised his sword with a shaky hand. He knew it wouldn't protect him, but he wasn't going to die without a fight. However, as the wolf stepped closer, it began to speak calmly.
"You saved my life. Now I will repay your kindness. Hop on my back, and I will take you wherever you need to go."
Boots was shocked. He couldn't believe his luck, and he couldn't help but smile. Perhaps trust wasn't so dangerous after all. He thanked the fearsome creature before him, then stowed his sword and climbed onto the wolf's back. Instantly, they were racing through the Norwegian forest with incredible speed. They bounded faster than any stallion in the kingdom. With the wind rushing through his hair and the road a blur by his side, Boots felt ecstatic. Covering ground at this rate, he'd be sure to find his brothers. But as the hours dragged by without any sign of the missing princes, Boots' confidence began to falter. The air grew colder, Graylegs slowed to a trot. Then the wolf gave a warning, sending a shiver down the prince's spine.
"We have to be quiet. In the next valley lives a terrible giant named Kashi."
Boots and Graylegs crept to the ridgeline and peered into the valley below. A huge cabin sat in the center. Its thatched roof was twice as high as a normal home. Surrounding it was a grassy field littered with strange stone statues. Boots had never seen anything like it, but Graylegs knew all the secrets of the forest. He explained that the giant was an ill-tempered monster. Any animal that he caught in his valley was turned to stone. Birds, deer, wolves, even humans. Boots stared at his companion, appalled, and asked why nobody had ever killed Kashi. But Graylegs just shook his large head somberly. The giant had found a spell to make him immortal. He had removed his heart and hid it somewhere where nobody could find it. And without the heart, he was immortal. He couldn't be killed. So the denizens of the forest had to avoid him and skirt the edges of the valley. They would have to do the same. Boots frowned, running his fingers through the wolf's ruff. It would take them an extra 3 days to circle this giant's valley. He was running out of food. And if they just cut across quietly, surely they would be fine. Graylegs reluctantly agreed. As Boots and Graylegs snaked through the valley, a dense fog settled in around them. Graylegs stepped lightly. He was careful not to make a sound as he wove through the mysterious stone statues. Boots felt a chill creep up his spine as he examined them. Many were covered in moss and lichens. They must have been there for years. Their lifelike faces were twisted in fear. Each one was a haunting warning against trespassers. But they were almost through the valley. They'd made it, he told himself, just as they came upon a cluster of new statues. These statues were hewn out of fresh stone. They were not covered in moss, and they were in the shape of six dashing young men and six beautiful women, all riding stallions. Boots nearly cried out, but he caught himself. Still, Graylegs felt the tremor pass through the prince's body. He asked what was wrong, softly. Boots swallowed the lump rising in his throat and whispered,
"These are my brothers and their wives."
Grey Wolf stopped his delicate prowl, letting Boots slide off his back and onto the dewy grass beneath the statues. The pair bowed their heads, but Boots' grief and horror quickly changed to fiery agitation. He whispered to the wolf, "Is there any way to bring them back to life?" Graylegs nodded reluctantly. There was a way, but it was all but impossible. Only Kashi could reverse the statues, and the giant would turn him to stone before he could even ask. Before Greylegs had finished talking, Boots had started to tiptoe toward the giant's house. Greylegs hurried after him.
"What are you doing?" he asked. "We need to get out of here."
But Boots shook his head stubbornly. The giant's heart was probably hidden in the cabin. If they could find it, he could save his brothers. The wolf narrowed his yellow eyes. Alarmed at Boots's recklessness, he knew what happened to anyone who encountered the giant. So he slinked away into the shadows. Boots, however, was undeterred. He crept up to the house and peeked through a window. It seemed to be empty. There was no sign of the giant. He boosted himself up and climbed inside. As he looked around, a voice emerged from a dim corner of the room.
"Who are you?"
it asked. Boots jumped nearly a foot. He turned to see a young woman sitting in a chair. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Her face glowed like a pale opal, and her hair seemed spun from strands of rose gold. But then Boots noticed something strange. Her legs were clasped in iron shackles. The prince stammered, "Who are you?" The woman introduced herself as Princess Astrid. She explained that several years ago, she was traveling with her family through the valley. The giant attacked them and turned her whole clan to stone, except for her. He kept her alive. But that was even worse. She was subjected to a terrible punishment. She trailed off and didn't finish her sentence. Boots told her that the giant had turned his brothers to stone, too. He had come for the giant's heart so he could beat him and turn his family back. If she would help him, he would gladly try to rescue her family, too. Astrid's eyes glistened at the thought. If only it were possible. But the heart wasn't in the cabin. She had looked for years to no avail. It was a lost cause. They would never find it. He should give up and leave now, while he still could, or they would both be punished. She blinked the tears out of her eyes, sealing her mouth into an agonized line. But Boots refused to give up. He began to pace around the room, opening drawers, rummaging through shelves, until suddenly he heard heavy footsteps echo through the valley. Astrid gasped. She begged Boots to leave. She leapt up from her chair and shuffled towards him awkwardly in her shackles. It was then that Boots realized she was only wearing a silk nightgown. He could see the curves of her body through the gauzy material. His heart raced in his chest, and he suddenly felt lightheaded. Astrid grabbed him by the shoulders and aimed him back towards the window.
"You must leave now, or he'll turn you to stone."
But Boots shook his head and drew his sword. He was prepared to fight the giant. Astrid looked frantic. Her eyes darted around the room and towards the bed. That might work. He could hide under the bed. She'd help him find the heart, but only if he hid. The echoing footsteps were getting louder. Boots glanced towards the window, then agreed, diving under the bed. As he settled into the shadows, Astrid whispered softly but insistently from above,
"No matter what you hear, stay hidden until he leaves, or you will die."
Then the door opened. Kashi barged in with a clatter, slamming the door and rattling his plates. The princess ran her hands across the bed covers, pretending to have just finished making the bed and trying desperately to look serene. But Kashi still eyed her suspiciously and sniffed the air. His voice boomed.
"Why does the house smell like the blood of a human?"
Astrid blinked at him with thick eyelashes.
"Remember that magpie who sometimes brings me trinkets?" she said coyly. "Today it dropped a human bone on the windowsill. I promptly got rid of it and tried to clear out the smell, but it didn't work."
Kashi eyed her skeptically, but accepted the explanation. He sat down on the edge of the bed. Astrid crossed the room to close the window. With her back turned, she clenched her jaw and prepared herself for what was coming, just daring to hope that perhaps it was the last time. When she turned back, she saw Kashi reclined on the bed.
"I had a long day. come and ease my stress," he said.
Astrid forced a smile to her face, then climbed on the bed with Kashi. She massaged his giant arms, which seemed woven of iron. She unbuttoned his enormous shirt and trousers. Under the bed, Boots plugged his ears with his fingers. The sound of the bed creaking was almost deafening. He wished he could be anywhere else. At one point, he feared the frame might break and the entire thing would come crashing down on top of him. But thankfully, his hiding place held strong and eventually stopped moving. He cautiously began to listen again. Kashi cradled Astrid in his arms. She cooed,
"Do you truly love me?"
Kashi stammered,
"Yes, yes, of course I love you."
Astrid frowned.
"But how do I know that is true?"
Kashi picked her up and looked into her eyes.
"I will do anything you ask. I'll conquer any kingdom. I'll bring you all the jewels or treasures you could dream of."
Astrid shook her head.
"I don't need jewels, silly."
The giant pressed anxiously.
"Tell me what you want. Anything, my love."
Astrid looked around the room for a moment. Then she said,
"I have everything I need except your trust. If you love me, tell me where you hid your heart."
Kashi sat up suddenly.
"I can't do that,"
he exclaimed. Astrid subtly flinched. She may have played her hand too soon, but she rolled away. She made one last plea.
"Then I will never truly love you," she said plainly.
Kashi tried to grab her, but she slipped away. He had sworn he would never tell anyone where he had hidden his heart. But what was the point of living forever if he couldn't have Astrid's love? He hesitated for a moment. Part of him knew he shouldn't tell her, but he reassured himself. Astrid couldn't leave the house anyway. It didn't matter if she knew where the heart was. She would never be able to get to it. He walked over to her and grabbed her hands. He began slowly.
"A day's ride from this valley, there is a lake. In that lake, there is an island. On the island, there is a church. In the church, there is a well. In the well, there is a duck. In the duck, there is an egg. And hidden in that egg is my heart."
Astrid was shocked. Her plan had actually worked, but even more surprised was Boots. He wanted to leap out from his hiding spot and taunt the giant, but he knew he had to wait, to be patient. He covered his mouth and stayed hidden. Astrid flung her arms around Kashi's neck and kissed him hard. Her heart raced. A tiny shudder of guilt vibrated through her body. She was manipulating the giant, but she beat the feeling back. Kashi had ripped her from her family, held her hostage, and forced himself on her every night. She owed him nothing. While Astrid offered Kashi another kiss, she repeated a silent mantra in her mind. "You only do this for survival, and soon he will be dead." Coming up, Boots battles a giant. Now back to the story. The next morning, Kashi awoke with the sunrise. Astrid was still asleep as he slipped out to go hunting. When Boots heard the giant's footsteps disappear from the valley, he finally crawled out from under the bed. He looked at Astrid asleep in bed. She was the most beautiful creature he had ever seen. He thought about waking her, but he had the information he needed for his quest, and the girl deserved the forgetting of sleep after what she lived through with this monster. As quietly as possible, he slipped out the window. Boots found Greylegs waiting for him near the edge of the valley. The wolf swung his giant tail around the air like a banner.
"You're alive!"
he exclaimed.
"I was almost ready to give up."
Boots grinned, ran to his friend, and threw his arms around his fuzzy neck. Before recounting the events of the last day, meeting the princess, hiding under the bed, and then, the most important part, learning the location of the heart. Greylegs gave a soft, excited yip, then turned serious. They had no time to spare. With that, Boots climbed onto Greylegs' back and they raced into the forest. After a day of riding, Boots and Greylegs arrived at a serene lake surrounded by pine trees. In the middle of the water was an island. On its near shore, they could see a quaint church.
"That must be it!"
Boots exclaimed. The two companions steeled themselves, then jumped into the cold, glacial water. They swam across the lake and crawled onto the island's sandy beach. They were nearly frozen, but they had no time to waste. They made their way to the church. To their dismay, the church was chained shut with a heavy lock. Boots tried to kick the door open, but it held strong. He walked around the structure, searching for a way in, but it seemed impenetrable. Then he noticed a key hanging from the top of the steeple. Greylegs slumped.
"How will we ever reach that?" he asked.
Boots kicked the ground. He should have known it wouldn't be so easy, but there had to be a way. He paced around the island frantically, to no avail, until suddenly he remembered the raven from early in his travels. He cupped his hands around his mouth and yelled as loudly as he could,
"Dear Raven, I doubted I would ever need your help, but if you can hear me, that moment has come."
After a few minutes, the raven appeared in the sky. It circled above the chapel. Boots pointed out the key. The raven swooped down and freed it from the steeple. Then, with a cheerful caw, he dropped it down to Boots and disappeared back into the sky. Boots yelled out an ecstatic thank you as he ran to the church door and unlocked it. Inside the chapel were several pews and an altar. But off to the side was a well. Boots peered inside. Just as Kashi the giant had described, there was a duck paddling in the water. Boots reached in to grab it, but as he lifted the bird from the water, it laid an egg. Boots felt everything around him slow. He realized the egg must contain Kashi's heart, but it was now falling through the air. Boots tried to grab for it, but he couldn't drop the duck fast enough. He watched the egg hit the water. He threw his body into the well after it, but amidst the splashes and the murky darkness, it disappeared. The egg was gone. The young prince punched the water in frustration.
"Darn it!"
he yelled. His mediocre swimming skills were ruining everything. If only he could swim like a fish. That's when he recalled the salmon he'd helped at the stream. Perhaps hope wasn't lost. He called out,
"Salmon, my friend, I never thought I would need your help, but now is the time."
Instantly, the salmon appeared in the well, greeting Boots with a flip of his shining tail. The prince explained his predicament, and the fish, without a word, disappeared into the dark depths of the well. Several minutes later, the salmon returned with the egg cradled gently in its mouth. Boots laughed, delighted. He thanked the fish as he seized the egg and hauled himself out of the well. Greylegs looked on, impressed, and congratulated the prince. He had never encountered a young man with so many helpful friends. Boots smiled and shrugged. He realized that he had disobeyed his father's warning about helping others, but he was glad. If he hadn't, he never would have gotten Kashi's heart. With that, the two companions exited the church, swam back across the lake, and rode hard through the forests and hills. They had a date with a giant. Boots and Greylegs ran straight to Kashi's doorstep, where Boots removed the egg from his saddlebag. He cracked the shell. Inside was a large, pulsating heart. Blood oozed from the vessels and dripped between his fingers. He looked nervously at Greylegs. The wolf nodded him on. Boots swallowed hard and then squeezed the heart. Instantly, chaos erupted inside the house. An ear-piercing roar echoed off the walls and into the valley. Dishes shattered on the floor. Furniture crashed. Seconds later, Kashi burst out of the front door. The giant clutched at his chest and howled in pain.
he noticed Boots holding the heart.
"Who are you?"
the giant demanded.
"And how did you find my heart?"
Before Boots could answer, Kashi turned to see Princess Astrid standing in the doorway.
"You!"
he screamed.
"I should have never trusted you!"
Astrid's face went pale. She turned away. She was ashamed of her deceit, but more importantly, she was frightened of what would happen to her if Boots failed. Kashi turned back to Boots.
"You boy, hand over the heart. You have no idea what you hold."
Boots replied that he knew exactly what it was. He gave the heart a squeeze, and Kashi howled in pain. "Now," Boots said, "if you want it back, you will turn all of the statues back to life." Kashi snarled at him.
"How dare you make demands, you puny human?"
He began to advance toward Boots, but Boots pulled the dagger from his sheath. He pressed it against the heart. Kashi froze in his tracks. He trembled for the first time in his life. It had been years since he had even contemplated the possibility of death. He began to plead for his life.
"No, please, don't do it."
Boots tensed, ready to slice the organ.
"Change the statues back," he said, "or I will kill you."
Kashi raised his hands in surrender.
Okay, I'll do it. But please, don't cut my heart."
Boots lowered the dagger. Kashi then removed a crystal amulet from around his neck. He intoned a few ancient words. Suddenly, a brilliant golden light shot from the stone and spread across the field. The statues began to crumble. Soon, all the animals and people returned to flesh. Deer bounded across the field. Hawks took flight. Boots watched in awe as his brothers awakened from stone. The handsome young men blinked in the bright morning light. They were confused, but alive. Boots let out a deep sigh of relief. Then Kashi held out his hand.
"I fulfilled my end of the bargain. Now, hand over the heart."
Boots looked over the field of creatures that had been held hostage by Kashi for years. He then turned to Princess Astrid. She trembled in fear. He knew what would happen to her next if he handed over the bloody organ. Gritting his teeth, Boots turned back to Kashi.
"You've terrorized enough people," he said.
Then he gripped the heart firmly in his hands and tore it in half. Kashi collapsed to his knees and howled in pain. His voice echoed across the valley. But Boots wasn't done. He tossed half of the heart to Greylegs and kept the rest for himself. They each tore into the organ with their teeth. They chewed the flesh into tiny fibers and swallowed them. Kashi's screams suddenly stopped. The whole valley went silent. His body crumpled into dust and blew away. The valley erupted into cheers. Princess Astrid threw her arms around Boots, sobbing with relief and anger and shame and joy. Prince Boots, holding her tight, couldn't help but smile. He'd managed to save everyone. His brothers' wives, Astrid's family. The quest had been a success. And it was all because he had helped some strangers along the way. The giant who had no heart in his body is full of complicated, overlapping themes. It's likely this amalgam of meanings helped it thrive through centuries of oral storytelling, and eventually made it one of the most popular stories in Peter Asborsen and Jürgen Moe's collected folktales. There's a message for everyone. As in many fairy tales, there's the surface-level moral lesson. Kindness to strangers will be rewarded. But it's tinged with a more sinister lesson from Prince Boots's father, that such kindness doesn't come without risk. It's just, at least in the world of this tale, that risk is worth taking. The story also explores even more complicated, difficult themes around sexual abuse. The giant who had no heart in his body circulated these lessons to children as a kind of early PSA, long before school assemblies started to educate children about stranger danger. Have an open heart, but watch out for strangers, because some adults do very, very bad things. After all, if Kashi didn't scare children enough, nothing would. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next week with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. If you enjoy listening to Tales, you'll love my other podcast, Mythology. Mythology retells our oldest stories as an engaging audio drama. Every Tuesday, join me and a cast of voice actors as we dramatize the enduring legends that have shaped human culture since the very beginning. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Nick Johnson, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Isabella Way. This episode of Tales was written by Amanda Hovseth, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle, fact-checking by Adriana Romero, and research by Mickey Taylor. I'm Vanessa Richardson.